News. The headlines: China's foreign minister is in Tehran to hold talks with top officials and sign the 25-year Sino-Iranian Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Accord. Facebook shuts down the page of Iran's English-language Press TV news network permanently, despite its claim of providing space for freedom of expression. Also ahead, North Korea says the U.S. president's condemnation of its firing of two missiles amounts to a, quote, encroachment and provocation. Good to have you with us. Our top story: China's foreign minister has arrived in Tehran to hold talks with senior Iranian officials on bilateral relations and key regional and international developments. Wang Yi is on a two-day visit to Tehran at the invitation of the Iranian foreign minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif. The top Chinese diplomat is also scheduled to meet Iranian President Hassan Rouhani. Earlier, Iran's foreign ministry spokesperson, Saeed Khatibzadeh, said Iran and China will sign the 25-year Sino-Iranian Comprehensive Strategic Partnership Accord on Saturday. He noted that the agreement has economic and political aspects. Wang Yi's visit to Tehran coincides with the 50th anniversary of the establishment of diplomatic relations between Beijing and Tehran. Facebook has once again shut down the page of Press TV News Network, this time permanently, in yet another attack by the US-based social media giant on Iranian media outlets. Without any prior warning, Facebook informed Press TV that its account had been shut down and the decision cannot be reversed. The social media platform has on a number of occasions attacked Press TV despite its claim of providing space for freedom of expression. Press TV has repeatedly fallen victim to censorship, not just on Facebook, but also on other fronts, including Twitter and Instagram. Political commentator Scott Bennett says Facebook is guilty of silencing the voices that are champions of freedom of expression.
They will try and spin it as somehow Iran is, an enemy of human rights. It is an enemy of Western values. It is an enemy of some holy core belief that Facebook and their handlers have. But ironically, Facebook is guilty of shutting down voices that are essentially champions of free expression. So I think it's a double hypocrisy. It's a disclosure of Facebook's a true fascism and authoritarianism. It reminds us that all of Western media, all of the mainstream media, and the internet media that has been dominant with the Joe Biden left-wing Democrat, transgender, humanist, environment worship fanatics, all of those people are fanatical about excluding opinions that talk about peace and sovereignty and stability and mutual respect, such as what Iran has been saying. And they're, of course, desperate to serve the Zionist Israeli plan to continue its war path.
Thousands of Yemenis take to the streets of the capital Sana'a and several other cities to mark the National Day of Resilience. This after Yemeni armed forces carried out a series of retaliatory missile and drone strikes against Saudi Arabia, targeting state-owned Saudi Aramco oil facilities.
Hours after the Yemeni army launched one of its largest retaliatory attacks on the Saudi-led coalition, thousands of Yemenis took to the streets of Sana'a to mark the National Day of Resilience.
The gathering today is the gathering of those who trust in God. These people have proven that they were able to take advantage of the war to develop their military capabilities. Today, our victory is crowned by our ability to stop Aramco by using our strategic deterrent weapons.
Yemenis say the seventh year of Saudi rule will be different as the Yemeni army is escalating its retaliatory attacks against Saudi facilities, pushing the kingdom to stop its years-long rule and to move toward a political solution to protect its oil giant Aramco from Yemeni attacks.
Yemeni people have withstood the aggression surprisingly. The Saudi enemy declared this criminal war from the White House in Washington to bring the Yemeni people to their knees, but they failed because Yemenis trust in God. 6 years ago, Yemenis woke up to the bombing of Saudi airstrikes and the bloodshed of children and women. And today the Saudis and Emiratis woke up to the burning of their oil companies by our missiles and drones. This proves that Yemeni people are getting stronger year after year.
Earlier, the Yemeni army inaugurated the 7th year with the National Day of Resilience operation against several military and economic targets in Saudi Arabia. The operation is the largest so far and used 18 drones and 8 ballistic missiles.
Thousands of Yemenis have gathered to mark the 7th anniversary of Saudi rule and siege of their country. They say their army now is capable of forcing the kingdom to stop its deadly war without conditions. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
North Korea says the U.S. president's condemnation of Pyongyang's recent test launch of 2 ballistic missiles amounts to a, quote, encroachment and provocation. A senior North Korean official said Joe Biden's administration has taken a wrong first step and revealed its deep-seated hostility towards Pyongyang. The official added that the test was self-defensive against the threats posed by South Korea and the U.S. with their joint military exercises. North Korea said this week it's successfully fired newly developed tactical missiles. Washington condemned the test as destabilizing. Biden said the missile launch violated UN Security Council resolutions and warned Washington will respond if Pyongyang escalates its weapons tests. The launches marked North Korea's first weapons test since Biden took office in January. The U.S. president has condemned a new voting law in Georgia as a blatant attack on the Constitution. In a statement, Joe Biden said the legislation was a revival of laws in the 19th and 20th centuries to suppress the votes of African Americans. He pledged to do everything in his power to stop the voting restriction efforts in the country. The law was passed by Georgia's Republican-dominated legislature on Thursday. Democrats say it is intended to boost the chance of Republican electoral victories by decreasing turnout. The law was introduced after people in the state voted for a Democrat in the 2020 presidential vote, the first in nearly 3 decades. Georgia is one of at least 40 states where Republicans are pushing legislation to make it harder for people to vote. And a report by French historians says France bears, quote, heavy and overwhelming responsibility over the 1994 Rwanda genocide.
The French authorities pursued a policy that was totally disconnected from reality, a policy that bore the stigma of colonization. France aligned itself with the regime of President Habyarimana, which was a racist regime.
The report noted that Paris was blind to the preparations made for the massacre. It added that there was a failure on the part of France under former French leader François Mitterrand, who had close ties to former Rwandan President Juvenal Habyarimana. The report concluded that in July 1994, masterminds of the genocide gathered in a safe zone established by French forces in the west of the African country. Kigali has hailed the publication of the report, calling it an important step. At least 800,000 people were killed by ethnic Hutu extremists during the mass murder. The findings are being made public after years of French secrecy over links to the Hutus who ruled Rwanda. Political commentator Mustafa Traore says it is important that the French government acknowledges the findings of the report on its role in Rwanda's genocide.
I think that it's been some years now that many people were saying that France was partly responsible for the genocide that took place in the 90s in Rwanda. And so there is some research. Now we have to check and see what the different research say. That's going to be one step. And if France is responsible, it is very important for the French government to acknowledge it and if there are some reparations, to think about it as well. So I think it is a positive step forward. So I think that the report is telling the truth.
Turning to other news now, Brazil records its deadliest day of the coronavirus pandemic thus far with 3,650 new fatalities. The Latin American country registered over 84,000 new COVID-19 cases as well. Overall, it has reported more than 12.3 million infections and over 307,000 deaths. Brazil is struggling with a battered healthcare system, a new virus variant, and a sluggish vaccination program. The country is second only to the US in terms of infections and fatalities. Elsewhere in the region, Mexico registered over 5,300 cases and more than 650 deaths in 24 hours. That has brought Mexico's overall cases to more than 2.2 million and the total death toll to nearly 201,000. That's why the government says the real numbers are significantly higher. Italy, meanwhile, has suffered its highest number of deaths since the Second World War in 2020 due to the coronavirus pandemic. According to the National Statistics Agency, the number of deaths jumped more than 100,000 over the previous year to 746,000. The demographic picture of the EU nation has undergone a profound change because of the impact of COVID deaths. Italy's resident population shrank by around 384,000 in 2020. The drop means it is as if a city the size of Florence disappeared last year. Italy is in the grip of a third wave of the pandemic and has the second highest official COVID death toll in Europe after Britain. Germany's top health official says there are clear signals that the country's third wave of the coronavirus could be worse than the first two.
There are clear signals that this wave could become significantly worse than the first two waves. We must prepare for the number of cases rising strongly and that more people get seriously ill again, that hospitals will get overburdened and that a lot of people will die. We're just at the beginning of this development, and if we don't massively countersteer immediately, the consequences will be grave.
The health official also warned that the number of new infections could rise to 100,000 in a day if the spread of the virus is not curbed. Weiler urged people to stay at home over Easter, warning that Germany will have very difficult weeks ahead. During a press conference, the health minister, Jens Spahn, also warned that the health system could reach its limits in April. The number of new confirmed infections in Germany has jumped in recent weeks. The country has registered more than 75,000 deaths out of over 2.7 million infections. A school in northern England is in the center of a media firestorm after suspending a teacher for insulting Islam's Prophet Muhammad. The school apologized to parents after a protest. However, many are unhappy with the school's reaction, claiming that Muslims are breaching freedom of speech. Robert Carter was in Batley to find out more.
In the English town of Batley, a local grammar school has caused major controversy after a teacher showed a blasphemous cartoon of Islam's holy prophet Muhammad to students during a religious studies class. Outraged parents of Muslim students began protesting outside the school gates on Thursday, demanding the school take action against Islamophobia.
The incident from Monday, 22nd of March, must also be investigated from a criminal perspective,
yes,
given that it was a clear attempt to stir up religious hatred. We also use this opportunity to call upon the entire British Muslim community to review the materials being taught in their children's schools.
Batley Grammar School reacted quickly, suspending the teacher, launching an investigation and apologising to parents. However, the British press and politicians have opted to condemn the protesters instead, adding further fuel to the fire.
I was disturbed to see scenes of people protesting outside the school. That is not right. We shouldn't have teachers, members of the staff of schools feeling intimidated.
The creator of the universe, Allah, the most merciful, doesn't need a crowd hanging around outside a school.
Many details about what the protesters have been demanding are not clear. Press TV spoke to locals to find out more.
As far as I know, the parents have been very, very responsible. I mean, many of the protesters are not even parents, and the parents have acted very responsibly, very, very professionally, and they should be commended. You know, they're basically the victims of this situation, but they're also the stars of this situation, that they've basically acted in a calm, collective manner. They've not made any unreasonable demands to the school. They've not asked for anything untoward to happen towards the teacher. They've been very, very responsible, and they should be commended for their stance and for their actions.
The school has acknowledged that the resource used in Monday's lesson was completely inappropriate and had the potential to cause considerable offence within the community. However, many online are now arguing that Muslims need to accept insults on the Holy Prophet as part of freedom of speech, and if they don't like it, they have to essentially lump it. However, with further Muslim action planned elsewhere in the country, and also the media continuing to hype up the story, it's likely that things will continue to escalate going forward. Robert Carter, Batley.
US President Joe Biden has held his first press conference since he took office in January. Immediate reviews of the press conference ran mostly along party lines in a nation that remains highly polarized following a disputed election. Ramin Mazahari is in Chicago.
After more than 2 months of almost unprecedented delay, United States President Joe Biden faced journalists in his very first press conference. Biden often read from prepared notes and spoke for just an hour. He selected the reporters who could ask him questions and avoided the conservative media, which has regularly asked that he finally engage with journalists without scripted questions or aides to help him.
Biden doesn't have any. Why? I think the speculation is that is very valid, that he is in cognitive decline. They're worried that he can't, he wouldn't be able to hold up over press questioning for a while. They're worried that he won't be able to hold up if he had to give a good big speech.
Biden fielded questions on changes to voting laws and the Senate filibuster tactic, avoided questions on gun control, and said he expects to run for re-election. Even though the country is in the middle of the worst socioeconomic crisis since the Great Depression, the mainstream media journalists allowed to attend awarded the largest portion of their questions to a problem outside the country's borders, the increase of refugees from Latin America. There appeared to be very little of the often extreme combativeness and skepticism towards Biden as there was towards his predecessor, Donald Trump. During the presidential campaign, both mainstream media and social media corporations were routinely accused of giving Biden preferential treatment. Corruption allegations involving his son went ignored, while many said Biden rarely faced difficult questions.
There's the right-wing press that, of course, are going to attack him. And then there's the press that support him, and they're not going to say anything critical of him. They're not going to say anything critical of certain Democrats either.
On foreign policy, neither Iran nor Russia was mentioned. Regarding Afghanistan, Biden said it would be hard to meet the May 1st deadline set for America's total withdrawal, but he also said that he did not picture troops still occupying Afghanistan in 2022. Keeping up his antagonistic stance towards China, Biden alleged that Chinese President Xi Jinping, quote, doesn't have a democratic bone in his body. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
That's our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Path towards enlightenment.
In the name of God, the all-compassionate, the all-merciful. Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of our weekly series, Path Towards Enlightenment, a program in which we try to give you an easy and fluent explanation of God's final scripture to all mankind, the Holy Quran. The Holy Quran was revealed to the last and greatest of all messengers, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. We continue from where we left off last week, and here are ayahs 7, 8 and 9 of Surah Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. O you who have faith, if you help Allah, He will help you and make your feet steady. As for the faithless, their lot will be to fall into ruin, and He will make their works go awry. That is because they loathe what Allah has sent down, so He made their works fall. You might recall last Friday in our explanation of the previous ayahs of this surah, we said the seemingly good deeds of the disbelievers, though these may be of benefit for the doers in their brief transient life of the mortal world, these deeds have no worth and value in afterlife, since these were not based on faith. We also said that when the disbelievers impose wars, the believers ought to decisively confront them, but according to Islamic rules, should spare the life of those who surrender, as well as of the civilians. As for the martyrs, their sins are forgiven for their sacrifice in defending the faith, and they are alive with provisions from the Lord Most High, while we cannot perceive them. The ayahs that we just recited to you now mean to say that the faithful should be patient and steadfast in defending religion, and preventing corruption through whatever means they're capable of, such as speech, writing, property, and even life, all of which are considered striving in the way of Allah, who will keep our feet firm and steady on the right path for having helped him, although he is far too glorious to need any help. As for the material power of the disbelievers and the massive efforts they make against Islam, these are not lasting and will sooner or later bring ruin upon them, because of their disobedience of God's commandments and refusal to believe in what He has sent for the guidance of mankind. Hence, the ultimate loss for them. From these ayahs we learn that 1. Faith ought to be accompanied by deeds in order to promote truth and prevent corruption and deviation, since God helps the believers in their endeavors for having defended religion. And 2, the believers have various means to defend religion, ranging from speech and writing to property and even life, in order to defeat the stratagems of the enemies. And 3, Those who oppose divine commandments and deny the manifest truth will eventually suffer ruin and loss. Now let us listen to ayahs 10 and 11 of the same surah. Have they not travelled over the land so that they may observe how the fate of those who were before them was? Allah destroyed them, and a similar fate awaits the faithless. That is because Allah is the protector of the faithful, and because the faithless have no protector. Here the Almighty tells people that while travelling around different lands, they should keenly observe the ruins that dot the earth and ponder on the fate of the once mighty civilizations of the past that were destroyed for disobeying divine commandments, denying the missions of the prophets, persecuting them, oppressing the populace, and indulging in sins. It means a similar terrible fate awaits the present-day arrogant and unjust regimes for their spread of corruption on earth and efforts to suppress the believers, little knowing that God Almighty is the protector of the upright ones, while the disbelievers have no protector. These ayahs teach us the following. 1. There are lessons to be learned while we travel around various lands and observe the relics of the past, which far from being the remains of a supposedly mighty civilization, are in fact an eye-opener for us to desist from disobedience of God in order to avoid a similar destruction. And 2, God is the protector of the believers for their faith and sincere efforts, while the disbelievers bring ruin upon themselves by rejecting the manifest truth. And 3, it is faith in God Almighty that ensures the real success and prosperity, whether in the transient life of this world or in the permanence of afterlife, while there is nothing but perpetual loss for the disbelievers and unrepentant sinners. Now let us listen to Ayah 12 of Surah Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, from the Holy Quran. Indeed, Allah will admit those who have faith and do righteous deeds into gardens with streams running in them. As for the faithless, they enjoy and eat just like the cattle eat, and the fire will be their final abode. In this ayah, God Almighty gives tidings to the believers, whose faith is coupled with good deeds, of the bliss of gardens of paradise, where they will enjoy the shade of verdant trees and the delightful sights of fresh flowing streams, amid all kinds of comfort and luxuries as a reward for their abstinence from sins. In its next part, the ayah warns the disbelievers of the terrible fate awaiting them in the fires of hell, for their denial of the manifest truth and indulgence in sins, since they preoccupied themselves with the pleasures of the flesh and ate anything, whether good or bad, whether permissible or prohibited, just as the cattle and other animals do, without taking any steps towards self-reform and repentance, or for that matter, thinking about spiritual values. This ayah teaches us that 1. The believers are rewarded with the bliss of paradise as recompense for their faith, virtuous life, abstinence from sins, and struggle against the arrogant. 2. Pleasures of the world are transient and a distraction from realities, so one should think of the hereafter, resurrection, and the day of judgment, instead of wasting life in the pursuit of vain desires. And 3. Islam permits enjoyment of life, but in an orderly and virtuous manner, and strictly forbids a life of animal freedom spent in pursuit of carnal pleasures. And 4, to choose the right way of living, we should keep sight of the final abode, which should not be the fire of hell, which is the result of our own misdeeds. Let us listen to ayahs 13 and 14 of Surah Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny from the Holy Quran, as the concluding ayahs of this week's episode. How many a town here has been, which was more powerful than your town which expelled you, which we have destroyed, and they had no helper. Is he who stands on a manifest proof from his Lord like someone to whom the evil of his conduct is made to seem decorous, and who follow their desires? The intransigent disbelievers are always boastful of their wealth and what they call their welfare and guarantee for a powerful future, without reflecting on the fate of the past nations that the Almighty destroyed for their arrogance and sins. This ayah, which was a warning to the pagan Arabs of Mecca, who thought themselves as powerful and forced the Prophet of Islam to migrate to Medina, serves as a lesson for all generations. Just like the terrible fate of the strong and powerful Arab nations of the past, that is, the Ard and the Thamud, who were struck by divine wrath for their disobedience, neither the disbelievers of Mecca succeeded against the Prophet of Islam, nor will any future enemies of Islam succeed against righteous Muslims. God is the protector of the believers, whilst there is no one to protect the disbelievers, whose evil is beautified by the ever-deceiving Satan. Thus the virtuous, who are indeed a manifest proof from their Lord, can never be considered equal to the vicious following evil desires. From these ayahs we learn the following points. 1. The faithful should not fear the apparent power of the enemies, who are actually weak, since there is no greater power than that of the Almighty. 2. The believers should stand firm against the various stratagems of the disbelievers, and should continue their struggle against the enemies. 3. The base of faith is argumentation and clear proof, while disbelief stands precarious on slippery turf in view of its false ideas and pursuit of carnal desires. And 4. Satan beautifies to the disbelievers their evil deeds and makes them more intransigent against faith and Islamic values.
Back to reality.
It's the show where we discuss the most topical of topics, the most controversial of controversies, and the most important affairs of affairs.
Roundtable from Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners. You're listening to IRIB English Radio. This is Back to Reality. That's right. I'm your host, Muzaffar Haidar. Here in the studio, we have with us Sayyid Mohsin and Sheikh Yasir. Assalamu alaikum to both of you.
Alaykum as-salam wa rahmatullah. Thanks for inviting.
So the Quran tells us to avoid most of suspicion. What does this mean? I've always wondered about this verse. It says to avoid most of suspicion. Obviously, in the world that we're living in right now, there is so much fitna, there is so much confusion, there's so much deception. You'd have to be very, very naive to not miss. You'd have to be naive to trust everybody around you. So you do naturally find yourself being suspicious of people. and I don't want to use the word judging, but you know, you need to judge certain people, like, why are they doing this? What are the motivations behind doing that? But here comes the Quran and it says avoid most of suspicion because it's ithm, it's a sin. Sheikh Yasser, what do you have to say about this?
Look, it is a command in terms of the social order of society. And if you think about it, if you continuously became suspicious, continuously just thought bad about people, or this person. You know, first you start outside, then you start getting closer. Like, for example, the person on the road, then you start going to your neighbor. Eventually, you start going inside your own family. For example, na'udhu billah, one of your wife leaves and you immediately start suspect. Where is she going? Why is she going? Who is she seeing? Why is she seeing this person?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, like, for example, I'll just change the sin, backbiting.
Mm-hmm.
All right? There are fiqh rules and stuff on it, but, for example, the rule says you not backbite a mu'min.
Mm-hmm.
That is the rule.
Mm-hmm.
Akhlaq, don't backbite anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Why? Because it'll become a habit inside of you that will initially or eventually lead you to be backbiting a Muslim.
Subhanallah, yeah, makes sense.
Same with this, right? So if you suspect someone who should be suspecting, it has two things. One, it gives you your own personal solace. You know, you're easy with things. You don't have to continuously think about things that are happening, that are something out of even your control. So this goes back also to a personal relationship with Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. When you believe, I think one of our previous discussions, we spoke about Yadullah. When you believe that Yadullah fawka aydihim, my hand is part of the him. Right, so I have no control. It was things that are out of my control.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever Allah wishes will happen.
Mm-hmm.
On the flip side,
so you're saying that there's a sign here that you're actually mistrusting
God? You are mistrusting God, and sometimes you're mistrusting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
Why am I suspecting everybody? Is there something wrong with me?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Not only that, we have this on the other side, the concept of husn adhan. Now there's a hadith that says if you see somebody doing something, give him 70 excuses. Why? Not only for that person or your relationship with that person, but for yourself, your own personal sanity. I mean, that's the most important thing. It's not only the rules of Islam are not only for society. Yes, there are societal rules, but those same rules that play in society are personal and vice versa as well. Salah itself is not something I do it myself, but it should have results. Where are those results seen? If I pray salah in my house by myself, live by myself, and I don't interact with anybody, where do I show taqwa? Do I show taqwa with myself? I have to show it to other people. So it has the knock-on effect. It's always a cause and effect, or this type of solace for myself, you know, thinking good about others. And at the end of the day, how I think about others is that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala look at me. I think bad about others, expect the same. And I think good about others.
Profound, as usual, Sheikh. Syed?
Well, when we talk about the suspicion, we need to categorize. We need to see where to be suspicion and where not to be suspicion. In the Nahj al-Balagha, the last part of the Nahj al-Balagha, where we have different wisdoms of Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, I think it's 18, if I'm not wrong. Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam has said, "Kun fil fitnati kabn al-labun." Be in the fitna. Fitna is like, you know,
a test, a trial.
In the trial or at the time, no. At the time when the society, the
social disturbance,
the social disturbance that you have in the society, here fitna is being used, not in the meaning of trial. Whenever there is a social disturbance in the society and you don't know, you do not know who is right and who is wrong, this is fitna. Be like this, the child of a camel, Ibn al-Lubun. Ibn al-Lubun, what is the characteristics of this Ibn al-Lubun? It is said, La dhahrun fayurkab, wa la dhar'un fayuhlab. The Ibn al-Labun, the son of camel or the child of camel, is a way that it's in an age, obviously it's 2 years are ended, it's in the third year. And it's the state where no one can obviously ride on it and no one can milk. So no one can benefit from him by riding on it and no one can benefit by milking it.
So you should be useless?
You need to be careful. Now, this is careful. Be suspicious about everything. And don't let people use you uh-huh. and don't be the mean of being used by the people.
Mm-hmm.
So this is obviously, it depends.
Mm-hmm.
Like in the society that we are living, who we are suspicious to and to which matter are we suspicious? Obviously, at the time where we are living, we have this social media especially, it's not a true media.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that. We are talking on the social media, we're talking through the radio, but obviously the news are not the true news.
Mm-hmm.
We know that. They are the fake news. The televisions, the news channels are under the garments, mm-hmm. especially if we talk about the oppressors and all those places, the Western countries, obviously. We know that they do not say right thing. Mm-hmm. Yes, they are. They try to sugarcoat the false things and give it to you, especially, you know, when we know that the media is propagating the Islamophobia amongst the people. Now, where this Islamophobia has come from? The French minister has totally, like, clearly has said, like, Islam is spreading the terrorism and all those
but
things.
Sid, how does this tie into the hadith? Because the hadith, it seemed to be like the
yes,
it baby is, camel.
Be the son of camel. Why? Because, you know, sometimes what we do is we hear something, we watch and we see something. For example, ISIS spreading their own, like, videos. And we, as soon as we see something, we are forwarding these messages and videos
mm-hmm.
to our family members,
mm-hmm.
to our friends. So we are the part of that fitna.
Right.
We are part of that propaganda. We hear something from the American channel or, I don't know, the rest of the channels, mm-hmm. the Zionist channels, and we forward it. Why? Because they're saying something. Might be our intention is to inform people that they're saying the wrong thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you never know. You need to give the explanation.
Yeah.
About that thing. But if you just forward things to the people, different people, especially like, you know, in the social media, we have groups, pages and all those things. And we keep uploading everything. So it means we are becoming the part of these things. We need to be suspicious towards all the messages that we get from mm-hmm. different people. We have seen that many times that, you know, especially on the social media, when something comes about a personality or a person, for example, in regards to the Maraje, or a famous, you know, sometimes it happens, like they say he's very sick, he has passed away and all those things, and then later you find out there was nothing like that. So it's just a small example that I'm giving. So you need to be suspicious about the messages that you get in today's world.
Right.
Because the Zionist regime is working on it, especially in this pandemic and all those things, you know, when we know that, for example, when we were uploading the pictures of Qasem Soleimani on the Facebook, and they were deleting, they were blocking our IDs.
Oh, yeah.
So what kind you can say, like, messages or the things that were uploaded on the Facebook were not blocked. What message were they conveying to the people where our message was not conveyed to the people? So we need to see, like, in which area we need to be suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
Between husband and wife, there must be a trust. They're mm-hmm. your clothes and your their clothes. So basically,
هُنَّ لِبَاسٌ لَكُمْ
وَأَنْتُمْ لِبَاسٌ لَهُنْ
أحسن.
They are your clothes and you are their clothes. You know, the clothes, they cover each other. The clothes are used to cover my body, to save my body from the outer, you know, the weather that we have. It also gives beauty to me. Like, it increases into the beauty of my personality. Someone can look at me with my clothes and, like, decide what kind of personality do I have.
Yeah.
So we need to be very much careful in the family relations. When we talk about the suspicion, it shouldn't involve in the families. We need to, as Sheikh Yasser has just mentioned about this, in regards to our kids, in some matters, yes, when you're training them, when you're very much involved in their training, you need to be very much careful about them. But that does not mean, like, you need to be suspicious about your kids.
Mm.
But yes, you need to be very much careful and having a kind of surveillance on top of them.
So Sid's mentioned a really good, especially about the media part. You have to be suspicious of what's coming through the media. In today's world particularly, you can feel this kind of fitna all around us. And I find it interesting. I still am struggling to find the balance between that hadith of Imam Ali alayhi salam to be like the camel and, you know, suspicion, you see. So could you...
That hadith, maybe my own explanation may be different from Sayyid's, is that there, if the person should remain neutral, there the person knows. It's not suspicious. He knows that that side is causing fitna, this side is causing fitna. I have the potential to sway it.
Right.
For example, in an election, right, both sides are corrupt. Uh-huh. It's an example, right? Both sides are. But there's an individual within there who has the ability to sway. To sway what? Sway the vote of the people to either side. Both of these know this.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That this individual here can be ridden or can be milked.
Mm-hmm.
Either he has the financial backing to support you or he has the ability to support you. This is where that person who knows this, not suspicious, he knows it.
Mm-hmm.
You should say, I'm neutral in this. Don't go and get me involved.
Uh-huh.
This, is,
this makes sense, right?
Yeah, this
right,
is my understanding of that tradition of Imam Ali alayhi salam. But in terms of suspicion of the media, even then, like, for example, we are not suspicious of the media. We know they are talking rubbish. We know it. We're not suspicious of it.
Right.
We know it. Mm. For example, we watch Fox. We know 110% that this institute, this news channel, is going to lie to me about Islam straight in my face. Mm. I know it.
Mm.
I don't want to suspect them. I know they're going to do it. And, like, for example, the example that Sayyid gave is a very good example. If you read some of their news, they will give you a report. In that report, they'll have 85 to 90% of truth.
Mm.
That is not what they want to show you, though. They want to show you that 10% or 15% that they know will catch your attention, but it's against the truth. So this, again, a person needs to be clever. Yeah. Not needs to be and pay attention to what he's doing.
Yeah, Satan always has to tell you
exactly
three truths and then one lie.
And it's that lie that's going to catch you. Mm. I remember there was an article written by somebody in South Africa once about Iranian and Israeli relations.
Mm-hmm.
So he wrote this article, and I wanted to reply, but the newspaper never gave me the permission to do so. So he wrote this article, and he was criticizing Israel, criticizing the Zionists, blah, blah, blah. Then in one line, just in one line, he wrote that there's a relationship between Israel and Iran, and that was all he wrote. So 90% of it was truth. But it was this one line that catches a person. We say, okay, if everything is truth, this must also be true.
Mm.
So this is how they work.
Mm.
And you can catch it, you can see it in many places, especially at the end of the news
right,
thing.
Right, right, right.
So this is a thing. But like again, like the concept of suspicion, like Sayyid said, it can be in different levels, for example, on a social level, on a family level, on an individual level. Again, it depends. That's why Islam also says that another thing could be a possible explanation is that, for example, a person comes to you to want to have a business partnership with you.
Yeah.
You don't really know the person, right? So you're not suspicious of him, but you're unaware of his aims, his goals. So what do you do in this thing? Same with this verse. The verse doesn't say, so the verse tells you, like, don't suspect him. Don't just, what you need to do is other verses and other hadith says, go seek mushawara.
Mm-hmm.
Go get consultation.
Investigation.
Right? Go investigate on this person. Therefore what? You don't suspect him. You be here, you get certainty. Is he a good person or not? You ask, for example, people who he dealt with previously.
Yeah.
You look at his background. You check his social media. That's what we do today, right?
Yeah,
we check his Facebook. We check his Instagram. You know, we check all these
things. We Google people.
We Google him. We Google what's it, LinkedIn, right? I don't know what it's called.
Yeah, LinkedIn.
Something like that. And we check all of this and we say, okay. And then we speak to him directly as well.
Mm.
You know, and we're trying, and if we have the ability to kind of character, you know, analyze person in a good way, not in a bad way.
Mm.
So this is what another possible example of that verse could be, because that verse particularly speaks about women.
Right.
One of the things that, you know, a woman who backed by one and who suspect other ladies.
Mm-hmm.
The thing is like this, don't do that. Just because you saw her with somebody else does not mean that she's doing something.
Mm.
Go and ask, go and find out. We get certainty.
Absolutely. I mean, the Quran is a very balanced book. We have to measure various verses with other verses before we can get an understanding. And as Sheikh mentioned, you know, the verse of the Quran, it says, "In ja'akum fasiqun binaba'in fatabayyanu." If there comes to you a fasiq, a wrongdoer, an evildoer, with some sort of news, then you should investigate into it. And if you read behind the lines, the Quran is also telling us that, look, if a good, innocent person who you know is not an evildoer comes to you, you don't necessarily need to go and look and investigate into it. You know, be trusting with some people and be suspicious of others, but avoid most of suspicion, inshallah. That's all we have time for today. From myself, from Sayyid Mohsin, and from Sheikh Yasir, we bid you assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Allah. يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رازك
يا الله
يا رب العالمين يا رحمن يا رحيم يا ربي لدي أمة رازك لتصي دليلتك once again.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
A senior Saudi official issued what was perceived to be a death threat against the independent United Nations investigator Agnes Callamard after her investigation into the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. In an interview with The Guardian, the outgoing special rapporteur for extrajudicial killings said, a United Nations colleague alerted her in January of 2020 that a senior Saudi official had twice threatened in a meeting with other senior UN officials in Geneva that month to have Callamard taken care of if she was not reined in by the United Nations. The article you're about to hear has been written by The Guardian columnist Stephanie Kirchgassner. The piece is titled Top Saudi Official Issued Death Threat Against UN's Khashoggi Investigator. Stay with us for more of Stephanie Kirchgassner's article. A senior Saudi official issued what was perceived to be a death threat against the independent United Nations investigator Agnes Callamard after her investigation into the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi. In an interview with The Guardian, the outgoing special rapporteur for extrajudicial killings said a United Nations colleague alerted her in January of 2020 that a senior Saudi official had twice threatened in a meeting with other senior UN officials in Geneva that month to have Callamard taken care of if she was not reined in by the United Nations. Asked how the comment was perceived by her Geneva-based colleagues, Agnes Callamard said, "A death threat, that was how it was understood." Callamard, a French national and human rights expert who will this month take on her new post as Secretary-General of Amnesty International, was the first official to publicly investigate and publish a detailed report into the 2018 murder of Jamal Khashoggi, a prominent former insider who used his column at the Washington Post to write critically about the Saudi government and the Saudi Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman. Agnes Callamard's 100-page report, published in June of 2019, concluded that there was credible evidence that the Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman and other senior Saudi officials were liable for the killing, and called the murder an international crime. The Biden administration has since released its own unclassified report, which concluded that Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman had approved the murder. The Saudi government has denied the killing, which occurred in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul, Turkey, was ordered by the future Saudi king. The Guardian independently corroborated Agnes Callamard's account of the January 2020 episode. The alleged threats were made, she said, at a high-level meeting between Geneva-based Saudi diplomats, visiting Saudi officials, and United Nations officials in Geneva, Switzerland. During the exchange, Callamard was told they criticized her work on the Khashoggi murder, registering their anger about her investigation and her conclusions. The Saudi officials also raised baseless allegations that she had received money from Qatar, a frequent refrain against critics of the Saudi government. Agnes Callamard said one of the visiting senior Saudi officials is then alleged to have said that he had received phone calls from individuals who were prepared to, quote, take care of her, unquote. When UN officials expressed alarm, other Saudis who were present at the meeting sought to reassure them that the comment ought not to be taken seriously. The Saudi group then left the room, but Agnes Callamard was told the visiting senior Saudi officials stayed behind and repeated the alleged threat to the remaining UN officials in the room. Specifically, the visiting Saudi official said he knew people who had offered to take care of the issue if you don't. It was reported to me at the time, and it was one occasion where the United Nations was actually very strong on that issue. People that were present at the meeting and also subsequently made it clear to the Saudi delegation that this was absolutely inappropriate and that there was an expectation that this should not go further, Agnes Callamard said. While Agnes Callamard has in the past discussed the threats she has faced in her work as a special rapporteur, details of the alleged Saudi threat are being revealed for the first time. The development will probably bolster the view of human rights experts that Saudi Arabia's government has acted with impunity in the wake of Jamal Khashoggi's murder in October of 2018, including through arbitrary arrests of critics of the Crown Prince, as well as his potential political rivals. The Saudi government did not respond to emailed requests for comment, which The Guardian sent to the Saudi Foreign Ministry, the Saudi Embassy in London, and the Saudi Embassy in Washington. You know, those threats don't work on me. Well, I don't want to call for more threats, but I have to do what I have to do. It didn't stop me from acting in a way which I think is the right thing to do, Agnes Callamard said.
Iranian news, Iranian culture, Iranian voice. This is IRIB English Radio.